This is a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. Go to allthews.3cr.org.au.
Evil minds that plot destruction, sorcerer of death's construction. In the fields of bodies burning, as the war machine keeps turning. Death and hatred to mankind, poisoning their brainwashed minds.
Welcome to the Anarchist World This Week, broadcast across Australia on the National Community Radio Satellite. Listen. The Anarchist World This Week, Australia's sacred cow slaughterhouse. Listen to analysis of local, national, international events. Listen to analysis you'll never hear anywhere else.
Welcome to the Anarchist World This Week, broadcast across Australia by the Community Radio Network. This is a special Christmas Eve broadcast. No, it's not about hope and joy. It's about something else, and you'll have to listen to find out. If you're wondering what anarchy is all about, an anarchist society is a voluntary, non-hierarchical society based on the creation of political and social structures which are based on equal decision-making power and direct democracy. Look, it is Christmas Eve. I don't expect you to listen. Unfortunately, this program is podcast, so if you're hoping to get scintillating first-hand analysis of what's happening in the world today, it's not going to happen. But I am very interested in what's going to happen next year, and so should you be. And I'll be devoting a fair amount of the program to Divided Nation, commonly known as One Nation. Because we are seeing interesting... And when I say interesting things, I remember the old Chinese proverb, or it's actually a curse. I hope you live in interesting times, because interesting times means times of upheaval and chaos. And I think, now I've been on the planet for 74 years, and I think we've now reached a situation which is becoming particularly interesting. We're seeing a shift in political allegiances, which have a profound effects on what's going on in the world and what's going on in this country, especially. Now, I'll be concentrated on Divided Nation, commonly known as One Nation, but obviously its policies are about dividing the nation. I'm not going to go into its policies. But I'm really interested in the fact that they are harvesting marginalised, disenfranchised and disillusioned Australians. They're harvesting them by the bucket load. And this is difficult for me to say, because normally you would think that people like us who are promoting an egalitarian community where wealth and power is shared would be the type of people we would initially attract, those that are marginalised, disenfranchised and disillusioned. But what's left of the left, sorry for the tautology, has failed miserably to interact with the increasing number of Australians who find themselves, who are disillusioned, who find themselves marginalised, and who know they're disenfranchised. And they're looking for alternatives. And we saw the same thing in Europe in the 1920s and 30s, and we're seeing it today in the USA and Europe and other parts of the world, where parliamentary democracy has failed to deliver the goods. Historically, the state was the source of all power, and the role of the state was to ensure that those who believed they were appointed by God to rule over the masses continued to rule using some of the most brutal techniques known to human beings. For example, if you are a traitor, considered to be a traitor, in good old England, in the 17th and 18th and 19th century, the punishment was hanging, drawing and quartering in a public arena. So what would happen is they'd advertise the time of the execution, thousands of people would turn up, and first of all, you'd be strangled. You'd dangle at the end of a rope until the life had almost been extinguished from your body. Your body would then be cut down, placed on a table or a platform, and you'd be drawn. No, they didn't draw on your belly. They got a big, ugly knife, and they split you open from your ziffy sternum down to your pelvis. Then the executioner held up your intestines. The problem with public executions, when you don't have somebody hanging off a gibbet, is you can't see what's happening, except for the few people at the front row. So the executioner held your intestines, and there's about 30 feet of intestines above his head, and then they burnt the intestines. The smell of burning intestines spread across the crowd. Forever telling them that this is what happens. It'd be ingrained in their brain. Then if the executioner was kind and you weren't convicted of high treason, just normal treason, they'd rip out your heart. And that's it. But if you were convicted of high treason, you had horses attached to your four limbs, and the four limbs would be pulled off your body. This was the treatment that was meted out to people who challenge the authority of the king or the queen. Hanging, drawing, and quartering. Now, obviously, the role of the state began to change from being the sole repository of power to a dilution of that power. And that occurred not because people begged and beseeched, doffed their cap at the ruling classes, but because they demanded change through parliamentary movements and extra-parliamentary movements. And we saw during the 19th and early 20th century, we saw change being introduced into parliamentary democracies around the world. And that change meant that the role of the state changed from, again, sorry for the tautology, that change meant the role of the state became one not just of control, but of redistribution of wealth through the creation of a social security system because of working class struggle. And for over 150 years, people in Western democracies, in parliamentary democracies around the world, put their faith in Parliament to look after them. They believe that if they voted in the right political party, their representatives, their representative will put their interests before the interests of all other people, because it was a so-called democratic society. This is what representative democracy was. But what happened over time is we saw the evolution of political parties. And representatives basically became pawns of political parties they belonged to. Because whether you're pre-selected or not in a winnable or a non-winnable seat, was dependent on your adherence to party policy, not on you satisfying the demands of the electorate. And what we slowly saw was the changing guard in Parliament taking on the interests of that small section of society that own the means of production, distribution, exchange and communication. Now this rot began in the late 60s and 1970 by an ideological push by those who had lost power to regain control of the parliamentary system by a number of mechanisms. Deregulation, which meant removing those regulations which have been put in place to protect people, to protect the environment, to protect workers, to protect the community as a whole. But these regulations were a brake on profits. So as deregulation became part and parcel of everyday life over the past 50 years, we saw the power of that section of society that owns the means of production, distribution, exchange, communication to determine parliamentary legislation increase. Then we saw privatisation. The private corporations, the private sector was angry that they no longer had total control of the economy. Because of the demand of working people, we saw the introduction of government-owned entities whose job it was to provide for the bulk of the population. For example, the Commonwealth Bank, which was privatised in the late 1980s, was established in 1911 to ensure that ordinary people, people on, you know, basic wages, could actually access loans, because there was no way they could access a loan through the private sector. The introduction of a Commonwealth Bank was direct competition for the privately owned banks, and it kept a lid on the escalation of prices. So we saw with privatisation, we saw many institutions which were set up to provide basic services at a reasonable cost to the bulk of the population being absorbed into the private sector. Because publicly owned institutions do not belong to the people of this country. They belong to the government of the day, and the government of the day can and has sold most of them at a loss. And what we see decades later is the price people are paying for the privatisation of basic assets like electricity, gas, the financial sector, telecommunications, airplanes, and the list goes on and on. Then we had globalisation. You see, with a global economy, if you're a corporate entity, especially, you can expand overseas. As you expand overseas or you come into Australia, what you do is you maximise profits. And how do you maximise profits? You maximise profits by finding the cheapest labour source. And the cheapest labour source is overseas. Non-unionised, pay them $1 an hour if they're lucky, no workplace laws. And what we saw was the destruction of Australian manufacturing, where jobs were exported overseas because it increased company profitability. At the same time, we saw a change in the way profits were redistributed in this country, private profits. Normally, private profits would be used to improve the company's infrastructure and resources and possibly even increase the pay of its employees to encourage them to continue to increase productivity. But with the fact that you could get a tax deduction for owning a share and not paying tax on dividends, because dividends, it's the company which they pay tax on dividends. What you saw is more and more profits being filtered into the hands of stockholders, shareholders, because that increased the stock price, the share price of that particular company. But we saw no increase in productivity. So globalization not only destroyed local industries, it actually provided the framework via which the shareholder became more important than the worker who was creating the wealth. Then we've got corporatization, and I don't have to explain what corporatization is to you. Corporatization is a simple concept. All you've got to do is go into your local temple of consumption and look at the brands. And many of the brands, although they seem to be independent brands, may be owned by one corporation. Say, from Alice Springs to Melbourne, you see the same brands over and over and over again dominating economic activity in society. And that's the key word, dominating economic activity. So through privatisation and corporatisation and globalisation and deregulation, we saw many of the advances which had been made by working people slowly disappear over half a century. Now, I'm going through this to explain why we as Australians find ourselves in this situation where 2 million children live in poverty, and I know I say it every week, but it makes me cry, where there is not enough money for public education, and we see private charities raising money to send Australian kids to publicly funded and owned schools. We see an inadequate public hospital sector, which is underfunded, chronically underfunded. We see all these things, and you wonder why. We see 1/3 of the population living on inadequate social security benefits when we live in such a rich country. What is it, 28.3 million people living on a continent? On a continent. And the government needs to pay workers directly in the private sector, working in the aged care sector or the early childhood development sector, because the privatisation of both of these industries has been a complete disaster. So what you see is the emergence of an increasing number of Australians who, although they're forced to cast a ballot, and most do cast a ballot, about 90% every election, what we see is an increasing disillusionment with the ability of the very process that workers struggled for generations, the parliamentary system, to provide any significant relief to people earning ordinary wages or on social security benefits, the bulk of the population. Now, a lot of people say to me, well, class analysis. What's class analysis in 2025? Well, I don't accept traditional Marxist class analysis. I think its time has come and gone because society has been transformed. I break down classes, and again, this is not my idea. I'm sure millions of other people think of this the same way. I break down Australian society into four distinct classes. Two do very well, one muddles along, and one has major issues. The 1% that own the means of production, distribution, exchange, and communication have done wonderfully well during the last half a century through deregulation and privatisation and corporatisation and globalisation. They have markedly increased their wealth in society. Markedly increased their wealth in society. Some people say by up to 500%. Some say 1,000%. And all you've got to do, if you're this way inclined, is just look at the statistics, which you can get on your search engine, and look at the growing inequality in this country. So the 1% have done very well. Now, class, in my opinion, is not determined by the type of work you do, but it's determined by the amount of disposable income you have at the end of the week. It's not based on whether you're a white-collar worker or a professional or a blue-collar worker. It's, as I said again, it's based on the amount of disposable income you have at the end of the week. Disposable income at the end of the week. Today, we find the creation of a new class of people, what I describe as the investment class. And about 8% of Australians can be described as being part of the investment class. That is a group of people that has a disposable income at the end of the week, which they can use to invest and then use this country's investment-friendly laws to increase their wealth and maximise their ability to retire comfortably. Now, you don't have to be a professional or a white-collar worker, but you do have to be in an occupation where you're well paid, whether you're self-employed or employed by somebody else, where you're making a significant amount of money that beyond your basic human needs. So you can be a tradesperson working for yourself. You can be a CEO. You can be a low-level bureaucrat working for the government in a white-collar or managerial position. And you're part of that investment class. So we have now seen the breakdown of those classical class divisions, which were based on the fact of whether you worked or whether you lived off the earnings of your estates, either rent or profits. Then we have the great, so that's about 9-10% of the population. Then we have the great bulk of the population, another 60%. And this is where wealth is generated by the government. This is the pay as you earn taxpayer, whether they own a small business or they are employed by somebody. The pay as you earn taxpayer, which provides over almost 70% of the taxation revenue for this country. The great majority of people who are pay as you earn taxpayers have little disposable and no disposable income at the end of the day. Obviously, if you earn $250,000 a year, you'll have disposable income, which you'll invest. But if you earn $100,000 a year or $120,000 a year, you'll find you'll have no disposable income, especially if you live in a household where only one of the adults is part of the paid workforce. And that's another story we may, you know, look at. So we've got this great mass of people who have very little future, who basically work all their lives, obey the laws, do the right thing to basically pay off a mortgage and pay for their own retirement, because that's all superannuation is. It's the transfer of the responsibility of the government of the day to the individual to look after themselves when they retire by using their own income to pay for their retirement. Unfortunately, it doesn't seem to work for a lot of people, because if you're on a low wage, say less than $1,200 a week, you'll find that you're not in a position to have much in your superannuation, and you still rely on the state in order to survive. And then we have the 30%+ of Australians who rely on social security benefits to survive. The unemployed, single parents, aged, disability pension, and the list goes on and on. So these are the four classes which we've created in this country. The 1%, the investment class, the working class, and people on social security benefits. So, what we are seeing is an increasing number of Australians becoming disillusioned with the ability to institute change through parliamentary politics. And to a significant degree, they internalise their anger. They internalise their disillusionment. And what we see is increasing levels of interpersonal relationship problems, increasing levels of psychological issues, because we're taught that if the failure is our failure, it's a personal failure, it's not a failure which is related to the system itself. We never look at the system as a whole. It's always the individual's fault. Maybe you can blame your parents or your grandparents or the teacher down the road. The fact is that it's not, you know, the problem is, in a majority of instances, not an individual problem, it's a society-based problem. So we have this situation where people are disillusioned with the parliamentary system and the major political parties and many of the minor political parties because they've never come up to scratch. Then you've got people who are disenfranchised. What does that mean? It's a big word, isn't it? Disenfranchised. Well, I remember the 1970s where I was able to acquire an education free of charge. I even had a Commonwealth scholarship to assist me. And the fact was, there was a social elevator in the late 60s and 70s, and that social elevator was created by people demanding change, demanding access for their children to tertiary education. They didn't want their ability to get on in life to be inhibited by their inability to cough up the money for a university course. So there was that push for change. And that change did occur, and then it was taken away. So the social elevator has been destroyed. There is no mechanism, apart from acquiring a horrendous debt, individual debt, via which individuals can improve themselves, acquire professional qualifications. That elevator has been destroyed. At the same time, we have seen an increasing amount of taxpayers' money be given away to the private education sector, being given away in terms of corporate welfare. When people hear that one third of companies pay no tax legally and they're paying 25, 30, 40% tax, they get very angry. They not only disillusioned, they know they're disenfranchised. They know their life in front of them will be a life of working until they're 67 to keep their families together. They know the stress this causes will cause interpersonal relationship friction and relationship breakdowns and psychological issues, if not psychotic issues. They know that. They see no future for themselves. And then we've got people who are marginalised, people whose lives will never change, who can never have a decent holiday, who don't have enough money in the bank to change their refrigerator if it breaks down, who need to rely on, you know, private charities to assist them in times of trouble. I'm talking about the one third of Australians on social security benefits. So we have the marginalised, the disenfranchised, the disillusioned. Now, these are the people that were normally attracted to ideas that I promote in this program, ideas about equality, economic equality, opportunity, the ability to share in the commonwealth. These are the types of people that are attracted to these ideas. Whether they're part of that working class, people who, you know, work all their lives in order to pay their bills and have an occasional holiday, or whether they're part of the Social Security network. But what we've seen is a total failure, and I'm not going to mince my word, total failure of people like me to influence this growing number of people. And I've seen recently divided nation, commonly known as One Nation, harvest in bucket loads the marginalised, the disenfranchised and the disillusioned. Not because they believe in the rhetoric of One Nation, but because it is different. It's not like the major political parties. But the problem is, divided nation is not about improving people's worth, not about improving their lives, not about improving the lives of their children. Divided nation is about stoking fear in the community. It's about turning one Australian against another Australian because of their religious beliefs, because of the clothes they wear, because of their gender. And the list goes on and on. That's what divided nation does. It feeds on the fear of the marginalised, the disenfranchised, the disillusioned. People that we, who promote the idea of an egalitarian community, should be able to attract. But we don't. And to a significant degree, this has occurred as a result of the failures of the 1970s to introduce significant reform post the Whitlam-led Labor government, which was interested in redistributing wealth as well as creating wealth. We are now paying the price for trying to use identity politics as a mechanism via which to mobilise the population at large. Obviously, identity politics has improved the lives of marginalised, socially and culturally marginalised groups. We've seen extraordinary changes in legislation. We've seen an increase in community acceptance for people who are considered to be deviant, abhorrent, because of their personal behaviour. This is very positive. But at the same time, we have seen very little effort made to incorporate people into a movement that highlights that the problem is not related to the differences in our community, but the major problems we each face are directly linked to the concentration of power and wealth in fewer and fewer hands. Obviously, it's very easy to point at somebody with a funny hat and say they're the enemy, or somebody who's a different colour, they're the enemy. It's simple. Simple, filthy politics. We saw it in the 20s and 30s and how successful it was in Germany and Italy and Spain, so-called cradles of European civilization. How easy it was to rattle that can. And we're seeing it today in Eastern Europe and Western Europe and the United States of America, the buffoons, United States of America, where the same tactics of division are being used to create fear. that ensures that authoritarian political figures come to the fore of any political, social, cultural debate. So Divided Nation is now riding on that coattail. It is very successful because the Liberal Party is floundering. Because any moderation in Liberal Party policies, which were promoted by moderate elements of the Liberal Party, have disappeared. Because the Liberal Party is nothing more than a rump of the Institute of Private Affairs, an organisation which has existed for over 70 years to promote the interests of the private sector before anybody else's interests. So here we have a situation where the traditional values of the Australian Labor Parties, which were revolved around providing solutions to the inequalities which existed in society, are no longer relevant parts of their policies. They're no longer relevant parts of their policies. What we see is the corporate sector dominating the Australian Labor Party, like it's dominating the Democrats in the United States of America. And at the same time, we are seeing the rise and rise and rise of authoritarian elements who are happy to use hate to divide the nation, hence Divided Nation, not One Nation. And to a significant degree, it's our fault once again, because we have allowed this situation to occur. We have believed if we support factional, sectional identity movements that somehow society will be transformed. Society is never transformed if you leave people behind, and especially if you deny them the ability to economically improve their situation. And that's what we see today at the end of 2025. We see an increasing number of Australians who have no faith in the system, who have no faith in the major political parties, who think that one way forward is to join Divided Nation, to vote for Divided Nation, because at least they seem to be against the system as a whole. So the rise and rise of Divided Nation is linked to the failure of parliamentary democracy to deliver significant reforms to a significant number of people in our society. We see this over and over again, where the enemy becomes the person with a different sexual orientation, the person who's struggling regarding their gender, the person, you know, of a different race, a different colour. Race doesn't exist, it's a made-up term. A different colour, speaks a different language, comes from a different country. There's one thing that the atrocity that occurred in Bondi Beach over a week ago highlighted, is the fact that the people who came forward, who confronted the armed gunmen, were Jews and Muslims alike. They were ordinary Australians who ran into the gunfire to assist everybody else. At that moment, everybody who was under fire was equal. They all understood their survival depended on them acting. And they did act, and some paid the ultimate price and died because they had tried to protect their community. This is a moment of great respect for what happened. It's a moment of great pride. The fact that there were individuals who were willing to risk their lives to save other people. This is not the aim of Divided Nation. divided nation increase its political power through highlighting the divisions in our society. Through not only highlighting the divisions, but actually making them worse through misinformation and disinformation. Reality becomes irrelevant. All that's relevant is what's in their rhetoric. So we are at a critical juncture at the end of 2025. We are at a critical juncture. And that critical juncture depends, to a significant degree, what happens depends on us. Yes, you and me. Because ultimately, it's the role the individual takes which determines the type of society we create. Remember the old Abraham Lincoln slogan? Don't ask what your nation can do, ask what you can do for your nation. Forget about the concept of nation, but let's forget about what you can do for your community. What can we do to create a cohesive community where wealth is redistributed from those who have acquired it by exploiting the labour of other people? Where wealth is, as I said before, redistributed to deal with the issues that are created because of the growing inequality in our society. And we're not going to solve that issue by joining Divided Nation or by putting our faith in the Labor Party. We're not even going to solve that issue by joining Public Interest Before Corporate Interest, which is an organisation I'm the registered officer for, which was created over a decade ago for that very reason, to move beyond identity politics and try to interact with the disillusioned, the marginalised, the disenfranchised. The issue today is about creating an extra parliamentary movement that demands change. Not change in terms of individual change, not change in terms of sectional interests, promoting one sectional interest above another sectional interest, not change regarding passing legislation which restricts the way people are able to interact and associate, but change which overcomes the economic divisions that have been created in our society. Change that ensures that the wealth is held in common. We do live in the Commonwealth of Australia, and it's no accident that the term Commonwealth was used when the country federated on the 1st of January 1901. The Australian state was created by an act of the British Parliament. Now, the British Parliament was very, very against using the concept the Commonwealth of Australia because that related to the period in English history where Charles I lost his head and the Commonwealth was created, where Parliament was the primary instrument of power. So we do face these issues, and I encourage you not to be cynical. It's so easy to be cynical in an era of universal deceit. It's so easy to be cynical when social media is flooded with misinformation, disinformation, and the list goes on and on. It's so easy to be disillusioned and cynical, to be cynical when consumerism seems to become the byword of existence in our society. Who's got the biggest house? Who's got the biggest bathroom? Who's got the best car? Who had the best holiday? Where consumerism seems to be the only lubrication that is used in our society. The issue basically comes back to us. We can determine the political, social, and cultural agenda of this society. And we won't do that by sitting back on our haunches and saying, oh, woe is me. Oh, woe is me. I'm sick and tired of listening to the major tribes in this country. There are two tribes in this country. Tribes that have come together irrespective of their sexuality, their gender, you know, their belief systems, the funny clothes they wear, but they have two things in common. We've seen, and we see this in all societies which are incapable of resolving any of the issues which face them, which rely on representatives to resolve their issues. And these tribes are, I'm gonna do this, I'm gonna do that. And what happens is, you're young, I'm gonna finish school. You get to university, I'm gonna get a good, you know, finish my course. You graduate from university or trade school, I'm gonna get a job. You get a job, oh, I'm gonna get a, you know, have a partner, we're gonna have a house, then we're gonna have children. Then the children leave, and you think, oh, now's my time, right? The last 10 or 15 years of my miserable life is my time. And then you find I'm going to have to help the kids with the grandkids because they can't afford the school fees, and the list goes on and on and on. I'm gonna. And then you die. And then you're gonna do nothing after you die, irrespective of your religious beliefs. So if you are part of the Gunner tribe, and I can assure you that a significant proportion of Australians are paid up members of the Gunner tribe, tear up that membership form and begin to look after the interests, and not just yourself, but the people around you. Begin to get involved in activities. It doesn't matter how low grade it is. You can stand in front of a bank with a placard saying, these people ripped me off. You can still do things like that. You can join an organisation. You can set up a debating group, a discussion group. You are capable of doing all that. You don't have to be part of the Gunner tribe. You can tear up your membership card and you can start doing things. Because if you don't tear up your membership card of the Gunner tribe and rely on somebody else to do it for you, it's not going to happen. If that's one thing I've learnt, after, you know, I began to be an activist when I was, 16, 17, 55 years later, 56, 57 years later, I've learnt you can't rely on anybody else. You've got to tear up your Gunner card. You need to get involved. And then we have the second great tribe in Australia. Somebody should do something about that tribe. When we saw the atrocity unfold at Bondi Beach over a week ago, we saw people who confronted the most horrendous situation, put their body on the line. Some paid the ultimate price, others were injured, because they understood that they needed to do something. They couldn't rely on the police, they couldn't rely on anybody else. They needed to react to the situation. Now, I'm not telling you to do this. I mean, that's an extraordinary courage, which most of us don't possess. But you can. Stop saying somebody should do something about that and start looking at your ability to do something, because you can. You can always make time. You can make time to have a swim. You can make time to watch TV. You can make time to play around a social media. So why can't you make time to get involved in things? Now, obviously, not everything will be a cup of tea, but some will and some won't. Because the essence of the huge number of reforms which were passed that benefited ordinary people during the Whitlam-led Labor government was the pressure from below. Was people like you and me, who are now elderly, who went out there on the streets and demanded a universal health insurance scheme, which was called Medibank then and now Medicare. We demanded a scheme that allowed everybody access to the public health sector, irrespective of what they owned and how much money they had in their pockets on that particular day. And today we reap the benefits of that struggle. Do you think that if we hadn't struggled for that and demanded that, that things would be like they are today as far as public health is concerned? No. And that's why we need to tear up our car to the somebody should do something about that tribe, and they're going to try. Because ultimately, cynicism, which seems to be the currency in Australia at the end of 2025, cynicism regarding our political system, cynicism regarding our leaders, cynicism about the possibility of change, even reform, let alone radical change, that's what keeps the ruling classes in power. Cynicism is the aphrodisiac of the ruling classes. If there's one thing you need to remember, that a cynical individual is no use to anybody, let alone themselves. I say to people, we're not going to change the world, but we can start that process. Every significant human step forward began when somebody took that initial step and attracted other people to walk behind them and then beside them and then in front of them to acquire that power and wealth. The struggle in 2025 is no different to the struggle during the 19th century or the 20th century or the first century BC. It's the struggle to reclaim power and wealth. It's the struggle to ensure that people make decisions regarding their future. It's the struggle to ensure that the commonwealth is used for the common good, not to enrich a handful of individuals. Now, this program has been pre-recorded. Next week's program on the 31st of December 2025 will be pre-recorded. I'll be back doing a live broadcast on Wednesday the 7th of January 2026. But I encourage you in the interim to look at public interest before corporate interests. PIBCI, PIBCI.net. If you like what you see, join. If you don't like what you see, find an organisation that you like and join that organisation and tear up that membership card for the somebody should do something about that tribe. And if you want further information, I encourage you to look at the YouTube, Public Interest Before Corporate Interest. There's over 300 presentations on important issues of the day. And if you, like me, think that history teaches us a way forward, then I encourage you to look at josephtoscano.nam YouTube channel. So there are many things happening, and they will continue to happen in 2026. It's important we don't lose sight of the idea that the way forward is not to be divided. The way forward is to understand who makes decisions today and to break the power that those elements in society continue to have. In 2026, it will be important for us to identify who the problem is. And as I say to people, it's not about waiting for the crumbs brushed off the corporate table and us fighting amongst ourselves for those crumbs. It's ultimately about sawing off one of the legs of the corporate table to ensure there is enough for everybody. There is more than enough for everybody in this country. It's a tragedy that so few Australians enjoy the commonwealth which is produced by this country. It's a tragedy the parliamentary system has been hijacked by a minuscule minority who use their domination of parliament to ensure they will continue to exercise power and acquire wealth in this country. Thank you for listening to The Anarchist World this week on your local community radio station, courtesy of the Community Radio Network. You can always leave messages on 0439 395 489. You can email me at info@pibci.net. You can even write to me at Post Office Box 20, Parkville 3052. I wish you a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year, because not only wish you, but encourage you to take up that struggle to create a society where everybody shares the commonwealth and where everybody is involved in the decision-making processes. Thank you.
Evil minds that plot destruction, sorcerer of death's construction.
An analysis you'll never hear anywhere else. Anarchist World this week, Australia's sacred cow slaughterhouse. 10 a.m. every Wednesday. Listen to The Anarchist World this week for an up-to-date analysis of local, national and international events.
Poisoning their brainwashed minds. Oh, Lord, yeah.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast. If you found it valuable, please consider donating or subscribing to support independent community radio. To find out more, go to 3cr.org.au.